Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Purujana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashubhanu Sudha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 18 Prithvi Maharaj milks the earth planet. Text number on the board is 26. Sarve Swa Mukhya Vatsena Swe Swe Patre Pritak Paya Sarva Kama Dugham Pritim Duduhu Pritu Bhavitam Sarve Sva Mukhya Vatsena Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Sarva Kama Dugham Pritim Duduhu Pritu Bhavitam Sarve Sva Mukhya Vatsena Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Sarva Kama Dugham Pritim Duduhu Pritu Bhavitam Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Vidang Pritim Du Pritu Bhavitam Sarva Svavakya Vatsena Sve Patre Pritak Paya Sarva Kama Dugam Pritim Du Pritu Bhavitam Sarvukya Vatsena Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Sarva Kama Dugam Pritim Du Pritu Bhavitam Sve Svamukhya Vatsena Sve Sve Patre Pritak Paya Vakama Dugam Pritim Du Pritu Bhavitam Sarve Swamukhe Vatsena Vise Patre Pritakpaya Avakama Dugam Pritim Pritu Pritu Bhavitam Sarve Swamukhe Vatsena Vise Patre Pritakpaya Kama dugam pritim, duhu pritu bhavitam, ladies. Sarve swamukhya vatsena, sway sway patre pritakpaya, sarva kama dugam pritim, duhu pritu bhavitam, Sarva, sarve, all, swamukhya, by their own chiefs, vatsena, as the calf, sve, sve, in their own, patre, pats, pritak, different, paya, milk, Sarvakama, all desirables. Dugham, supplying as milk. Prithvim, the planet Earth. Duduhu, milked out. Prithu Bhavitam, controlled by King Prithu. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Planet Earth supplied everyone his respective food. During the time of King Prithu, the earth was fully under the control of the king. Thus all the inhabitants of the earth could get their food supply by creating various types of calves and putting their particular types of milk in various pots. I'll just read the previous verse so we don't forget one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The trees made a calf out of the banyan tree, and thus they delivered milk in the form of many delicious juices. The mountains transformed the Himalayas into a calf, and they milked a variety of minerals into a pot made from the peaks of hills. So let's repeat this translation, 26. The planet Earth supplied everyone his respective food. During the time of King Prithu, the earth was fully under the control of the king. Thus all the inhabitants of the earth could get their food supply by creating various types of calves and putting their particular types of milk in various pots. Purport. This is evidence that the Lord supplies food to everyone, as confirmed in the Vedas, Eko Bahunam Yovadadati Kaman. Although the Lord is one, He is supplying all necessities to everyone through the medium of the planet Earth. There are different varieties of living entities on different planets, and they all derive their edibles from their planets in different forms. On the basis of these descriptions, one can assume that there is no living entity. On the basis of these descriptions, how can one assume that there is no living entity on the moon? Every moon is earthly, being composed of the five elements. Every planet produces different types of food according to the needs of its residents. According to the Vedic Shastras, it is not true that the moon does not produce food, or that no living entity is living there. Mong Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutundeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Siddharane. This is one of the common topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the general topic is faith in the scriptures or faith in the materialistic philosophies, including materialistic science. Prabhupada has mentioned many times that he didn't believe that they went to the moon. Matter of fact, he described it in many varieties of ways, not in just one way. Sometimes he said maybe they went to Rahu, maybe they went to the moon, they didn't see the residents there because they were too subtle, and how could they have went to the moon, etc. Now, within the realm of modern society, this is all in the realm of conspiracy theories. But this is one of our conspiracy theories. But our major conspiracy theory, as Prabhupada said in a morning walk in Los Angeles, I believe, 1976 or 75, that this whole civilization, which is meant to keep people in darkness, will soon come to an end with the next war. In other words, modern society is based upon so-called scientific facts, which are actually science fiction. And one of the basic principles, of course, that we always explain to disprove science is the fact that they don't even know what's the difference between matter and spirit. Although they claim they know everything, but they don't even know who they are. So if they don't know who they are, then how much do they really know? They're identifying themselves with a false conception, the fact that they're identifying themselves with their material body, but actually they're a spiritual soul. They have a spiritual identity. The soul will live forever, but they're making a big deal out of the covering, namely the body, and neglecting the soul. As we've heard before, it is the same thing as dusting the cage of the bird and not feeding the bird inside. And one of the false aspects of their propaganda is that they say they've been to the moon. I'm sure that many of our devotees have seen films, because they've made documentaries, to show all the inconsistencies, or at least some of the inconsistencies, of the so-called moon landings. Has anyone ever seen a document like that? Vijay, you never saw a document about how they never went to the moon? Did you? Yeah. It's hard to raise your hand in the morning. And in those documents, we can see so many inconsistencies. Matter of fact, it looks like a bad science fiction movie compared to the ones they can make today. And some of the inconsistencies, of course, are you find this gigantic rocket blasting down into the moon planet, lands on the moon planet, and that there's not one speck of dirt raised by the engines blasting on the moon planet. And then the astronaut hops out of the capsule. Well, first of all, the first picture was it hopping out of the capsule. They forgot that it was weightless, so he just landed immediately. Then they had to take that out, because that one didn't fit in. And then the next thing is he planted a flag, and that was a disaster too, because the flag began to wave. And there's not supposed to be any air. Of course, maybe the flag was so ecstatic that it started to tremble. But they had to take that one out too. But the most amazing thing is when the astronaut lands on the moon planet, all this dust just flies everywhere. So somehow or another, he must have eaten a lot on the way over there, because he weighed more than the space capsule. He created a big fuss on the moon planet, the space capsule. I guess the moon was happy to see the man, the capsule, land all the time there. So that was just one of the many one of the more interesting ones was how when they're blasting off from the moon planet to come back, you see the same picture again and again and again. I guess it was a low budget. I guess they ran out of money by the time of the end of the moon landing. And it's just like the same scene in the background repeated again and again and again, as if they were going nowhere. Of course, they probably were going nowhere. Then they have the people bouncing on the moon planet, and they slowed it up, and they show how actually it's just people walking normally, but they had sped up the motion picture scene, so it appeared like they were moving very rapidly. But when it was slowed down, you can see it was just normal cars rolling on the moon, normal people walking. And there's a whole idea, then the whole lack of stars in the background. Oh, the cutest one was on Time magazine, all these Life magazine, they had this astronaut on the moon. And in the astronaut's visor, you could see his fellow astronaut. The only problem with the picture was that there were only two people on the moon at that time. And in the visor, you could see the astronaut, but he wasn't taking a picture. He had no camera. So that means one of the people on the moon must have taken the camera. And from the angle of the photo, considering the shot, because you can't even see the person who took the photo must have been 14 feet high. So we get some idea how big the people on the moon are. And they must be intelligent, because otherwise how could they handle a camera like that? Take pictures. And they must be very humble, because they didn't ask anyone to take a picture of themselves. So that way we get some idea about what the people on the moon are like. Other interesting things is that a year before the moon landing, one of the chief engineers who was in charge of doing assessment for problems, he reported that this whole moon project is so full of problems that we're just wasting our time. And he made a huge report and was presenting it to Congress. Unfortunately for him, on the way over, he fell asleep in his car. And his car happened to be just stationed right on a railroad track. At the time when the train was just happened to passing by. Unfortunately, it crushed his car and him also. And somehow or another, his report disappeared. No one knows why. It was just all coincidence. Maybe the man on the moon took it. Doesn't like publicity. And fortunately for the general who was in charge of the project, who was complaining in the same way that the chief inspection engineer was complaining, he was just transferred to another job. And then after 1 year, where nothing was going right, and there, if you watch these documentaries, you can see the astronauts trying to take off on this space module. And every time they take off, it crashes. And most of the time, they're lucky to get out, parachuting out. But after a year of failure, somehow or another, they sent the rocket ship up without a flaw, which was impossible by any kind of calculation. Because in order to send up that payload, well, first of all, in order to send up a rocket ship, you have to go through a radiation belt, the Hale's radiation belt, which when they send through, Brigapati is expert at these things. What's the name of the radiation? Van Allen. Van Allen. When you say there's such an intense radiation there, everything they sent through before got fried. All the monkeys got cooked. Everything got cooked. So in order to protect oneself from the radiation, one would have to have something like a foot thick of lead. Unfortunately, if you have a foot thick of lead in that space capsule, it weighs more than two railroad cars. And there's still no engine that's capable of lifting and sending that far. So somehow or another, all these astronauts went through that Van Allen radiation belt. No one even got a sunburn. And even though there were solar flares, which increased it thousands of times the radiation, somehow or another it went effortlessly. And so, although they could never get it to land properly, the space capsule on the Earth, somehow or another it was landing perfectly on the moon and taking off. Although it was a piece of junk, actually. And everyone's supposed to believe it. Of course, I don't know how many people really believe it. I just saw in the headlines they're going to create a space station by the year 2020 on the moon planet. And they're inviting all the different nations to come and participate. And we're all supposed to believe it. Of course, we're also supposed to believe that JFK was killed by a bullet that stood in the air for a few seconds and then reversed direction because it hated JFK. It was so inspired to kill him, to fight all laws of nature. And Alan Dulles, when he was asked, how can you put this ridiculous information in your book, The Warren Report? He said, well, it doesn't really matter because Americans don't read books anyhow. So in other words, their philosophy, their history, their so-on, is so full of holes, so full of inconsistencies. But still, people have faith. And why do they have faith? Because, practically speaking, they're not presented or they're not interested in the Vedic conception of life. As far as they're concerned, it doesn't matter if there's people on the moon. It doesn't matter if there's people anywhere else. They couldn't really care. Because what they're interested in, simply, is making money and enjoying the senses. They don't care how it's done or who does it. But as long as they have their credit card and they can go out and spend, everything is all right. Anything more than that is too complicated for them. Therefore, although our philosophy is undoubtedly the most consistent, exacting, and precise due to the unbreakable process of disciplic succession, still, how many people, including most of us, are really interested in philosophy? Prabhupada even called the Hare Krishna movement one time the kitchen religion. Because what most people are interested in is getting enough to eat and a nice place to sleep and a little entertainment. And philosophy is much too complicated, especially if it's not consistent with their worldview of life, namely that the aim of life is to enjoy. Therefore, in countries where people are not enjoying, therefore they're usually more receptive because they want to learn how to enjoy. And if the Hare Krishna movement can help them learn how to end their suffering, be secure and happy in material life, then it's welcome. And if it gets too complicated, then most people are, you know, like teaching people that they're not their body. As I mentioned before, one time I was distributing a book to a person in a university, showed him all the different changing bodies, how the body's changing. But the soul within the body is always the same. So he became very enlivened, shook my hand, said, wow, that's fantastic, great philosophy. Wow, I never realized I'm not this body. That's great. And he said, well, take the book and give a donation. He said, the book? I'm not interested in your book. And he shook my hand and said, thank you very much. That was great philosophy. And then left. So that's Maya. The implication of the fact that we're all eternal souls is so profound that people can't accept it. It's so simple that it's bewildering to people. It is not that they understand what the scientists are talking about. It is not that they really accept all the inconsistencies. Most people just don't want to worry about it. They want to go home after a hard day's work, sit on the couch, drink a beer, and watch people crash into each other. That's the only thing their brain can actually appreciate. People working together to crash into each other. And anything beyond that is beyond their realm of appreciation, conception, understanding, or interest, mainly interest. Therefore, those who are fortunate to get these books and read them they may realize that actually there's something problematic in our current conception of life, and it's not very productive. Here it mentions that every living entity, they require some food. That everyone wants food, but ultimately food is coming from the Earth planet. There's a group of people who are concerned that we're destroying the Earth planet. They want us to use disposable bags instead of plastic ones. They have some solution to the problem. But it's so minute, their solution. The train of material energy, a material society, the locomotive is just speeding faster and faster into a brick wall, and someone wants to paint the tracks red while it's speeding by, with a little warning on the track, slow up. In other words, there are many persons out there, like Sataputapuru wrote some book on UFOs, and there, I think Bhrigupatipuru once had some books on some miracles or some wonderful things that are happening. What was the name of that book? Miracles. There are so many of them going on that the scientists deny, and there are so many personalities who are into conspiracy theories, this theory, that theory, but ultimately there's no solution except for Krishna consciousness. That unless we realize that we're not this body, unless we realize what our real activities are supposed to be, then everything is just like blowing on a boil. If you have a boil, it hurts, it's red, it's getting infected, and you blow on it, you get some temporary relief, but you don't get any real relief. Similarly, for all those who are realizing there's something wrong around here, and they write about it, they spend their whole lives trying to investigate it, discovering it, risking their lives to expose it, the newspapers just ignore it, the whole machinery is set up to just cut it, to try to eliminate it from anyone's consciousness, and if people get too much absorbed in it, then they eliminate them. But whatever the situation is, still they don't know what the actual solution is. And since we're the light in the way, we're the truth, the light in the way, that no one comes to Krishna except through us. That we're washed in Charanamrita. Therefore, we actually can give people the actual solution. But it's so simple, so easy, that no one wants to accept it. Hardly anyone wants to accept it. Because it doesn't fit into their conditioning for sense gratification. They're so addicted to sense gratification, they'll accept anything. They accept the slaughter of animals. They accept the slaughter of their own children. They accept the fact that they're being slaughtered by their medicine, by their very air that they're breathing. They accept everything just as long as they can get their little bit of sense gratification. The drop of water in the desert. Therefore, our main weapon is to not only present this philosophy, but to present Harinam Sankirtan, present prasadam, and present ourselves as joyful, that in spite of the fact that we're not addicted like many others are to the sense gratification in this material world, still we're not morose. We're actually more joyful. And therefore, those who are sincere, those who are not overwhelmed by false pride, those who are not overwhelmed by the mode of ignorance, those who have a little perception of reality, they'll be attracted by the Harinam Sankirtan movement, and they'll take it up, and gradually all the inconsistencies that are going on in the material world will be quite clear, because the fact is there are four problems in material existence, four imperfections, and the main one is cheating. We shouldn't be surprised. I mean, I grew up in America where, you know, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, you know, these were demigods, if not God. George Washington, he actually, when he cut down the cherry tree, he finally confessed. They probably beat him for a while. They cut that part out. He said, well, all his fingerprints were all over the hatchet. The hatchet was in his hand. Still, he denied it at first, but finally they got him to confess. So he became known as honesty personified. That was one of the few claims that he has for greatness. One of the few honest people in America. Certainly one of the few honest presidents. And Abraham Lincoln, he never really wanted to free the slaves, but somehow or another it wound up as a measure he had. He was actually at the beginning of the war. He didn't want to change anything. He wanted to keep the South in the Union. But as it worked out, for some reason or another, he decided to free the slaves. So these are our heroes. These are the persons who are honest Abe. He told the truth. He ate meat, he had illicit sex, took intoxication. But it was great because he told the truth once in a while. One of our modern presidents, it was asked, how do you know he's lying? Does anyone know how our present president, how does anyone know when he's lying? Yes. Right, his lips are moving. So this may be an exaggeration to a certain extent, but mercy, cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, these are the qualities, religious principles that have disappeared. And out of those, the last one is said to be truthfulness. But how can people be truthful when they have a tendency to cheat? In spite of the fact that their senses are imperfect, they're have making mistakes all the time, the fact that they're committing mistakes, that they're an illusion, the fact that they're covered by these mistakes, still they're claiming that knowledge, that they actually have knowledge and everyone else is in ignorance, that you have to go to their schools to learn their so-called knowledge. Although it changes all the time, it's knowledge today, it's ignorance tomorrow. So in spite of that, they're claiming that they actually have the truth. So this is called cheating. And in Kali Yuga, there's only two classes of people. The cheaters and the cheated. The Vaishyas and the Shudras. The Shudras are stupid. They have no real understanding how the Vaishyas are cheating them. And the Vaishyas just have enough intelligence how to cheat them. Because there's only economic development that the Vaishyas are good at. And the Shudras are only interested in sense gratification. Therefore, everyone is either being cheated or cheated, but ultimately everyone's being cheated by the illusory energy. Therefore, only by introducing Harinam Sankirtan, Prasadam, and transcendental book distribution, is there any possibility that people can realize that not only they're being cheated, but there's an alternative to being cheated. There's actually the truth. And if they perform those activities and knowledge, the proper activities, they'll actually be benefited. There's actually a process by which they can be benefited. And then one day, perhaps, when there's enough people who are not wanting to be cheated, then they won't have all these other mass cheating activities, like so-called going to the moon, or assassinating big leaders, or whatever else they do. I'm sure some of us are familiar with. When enough people become honest, then they won't. These tendencies to cheat will diminish, and therefore there'll be a possibility of people being educated, even from the very beginning of their lives, what is actually reality. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
In one of the purports, Prabhupada mentions that this is an allegory, this whole thing about the calves coming from different places and then milking the cow, Bhumi.
Yeah.
So where does it, generally allegories are fictitious people, right? But we have this earlier in this, not this chapter, maybe the earlier chapter, that King Prithu, he's going to, you know, shoot the earth, kill the earth. He's shooting his arrow at the earth, and then Bhumi comes up. So this is, you know, just like we have other allegories, but it's all fictitious people. But here we have real people, and then it goes into an allegory. How is this? How does this work?
You mean which part is real and which part is the allegory? Well, it appears that Prithu was actually going to kill the earth personified and then support it with his transcendental energy, with his power. So that part is real because there is an earth personality.
So Bhumi actually appeared as a cow?
Yeah. She can appear in many ways. She has many mystic powers. These earth these personalities who are in charge of planets, they're not ordinary personalities. They're great, powerful personalities who have mystic powers.
So then she spoke to him. They were having a conversation.
Yeah.
So then she said, well, if you want, you know, these things, you know, they're going to have to milk me in these different ways. So where does the allegory begin? Yeah.
I mean, milk me in different ways. No, I think here it says that everyone has their food. And therefore, we can understand that somehow or another, there's a process by which, for instance, the trees give their different juices, the mountains give their minerals. It may not be so much as directly as a calf being milked by someone, but there is a process that Mother Nature is producing these things according to the laws of nature, and it's all based on sacrifice. Just like in Ayurveda, there's a process in our body by which lymph is converted first into blood, then it's converted into muscle, then it's converted into fat, then it's converted into bone, then marrow, and then reproductive fluid. So there's a process by which it's done. Now, it's not always so direct. It's just like blood is directly, or lymph is directly converted into blood. But in the higher realms, there is it's compared to a bird putting seeds in the ground, and then the plants grow up. It's not direct, it's indirect. That one substance doesn't get converted to the next. Sometimes it's simply metabolical signals that cause the creation of one, what's called dhatu, into the next. So these things are going on. It's not so direct. But if you want to explain it to someone, you just say, from rakta, from blood, comes muscle. Now you have to go more deeply into it to understand exactly, even according to Ayurveda, how it comes about, because it's not a direct process. But for the simplification, rather than spending pages and pages in the Ayurvedic text explaining it, they just say that's how it happens, because it's good for a general understanding. Similarly, in order to explain how all the necessities of life are produced, so some simple analogy is utilized so we can get a general idea that these things are not coming automatically or by accident, but there's a process. So the general process that we're familiar with, especially in the Vedic culture, is how a cow with a calf gives milk. The milk cow is essential. So the original analogy example is utilized and just extended as an analogy into all the other processes. Yes, Govinda.
Marjorie, you were reading that comment from Srila Prabhupada. I closed my database right now, but Prabhupada's words were, even if you take it as allegorical, and it was in reference to Maharaj Prithu chasing the planet Earth and flying in the sky, and the earth taking the form of a cow. And then he goes into the example, but we can see on this planet how there are birds that fly. So it should, I'm pretty sure that's the same example that Srila Prabhupada used. Again, I've closed my database, but Prabhupada's words were, even if you take it as allegorical, we can accept that there are birds that fly on this planet and there are people that fly on other planets without conveyances. That's what I mean. Not that Srila Prabhupada was saying that it is allegorical, but he said even if someone were to take it as allegorical, are the words used. Just a comment.
Okay, good. Anything else? Okay, we can look that up. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Just like to thank everyone for coming to my class and thank Savastru and the other leaders here for their nice service here. And I look forward to coming back again, getting a good association. Give all my offenses.